If you know a typesetter or a graphic designer, you might know about kerning. I'm married to a graphic designer, so I know a bit about it. It's the spacing between letters or characters in text. And when it's done right, well, it's great. But when it's wrong, he gets irritated because he's a professional. And I get it, because now I notice it too. Kerning makes our lives better, and most of us don't even know it. Welcome back to Accelerando. My name is Paula Tuttle, and today we'll talk about notation in music and literature. Hope you find it useful. I now know enough about lettering, text, and kerning to some degree, since Bruce enlightens me about his job and some of the technical craft involved, just like I talked to him about my job. And we have a group of friends that we hike with fairly regularly, but I don't think any of this vertical knowledge goes into any conversations with them. Kerning just doesn't come up in regular conversations. It's a term that road geeks know, but none of our friends are road geeks. And road geeks are people that like to obsess over the finer details of road signs and highway numberings. I don't know how many musicians know it either, but they experience it when they read music. They just don't know the term. And I think it's a good term to know. I assure you that you all know the idea, and now you're going to know the word. There are some things in life that once you see it, you can't unsee it. Well, kerning is one of those things. But before I get into kerning, I want to give you an example of something you probably never noticed, but it's better that you do know about it. The big green signs on the highway that tell you where your exit is. When these signs are done correctly, the tab on the top of the sign with the exit number will be on the right if it's a right exit, and on the left if it's a left exit. So the next time you're out driving, check this out. And now that you see it, you can always see it. And yes, it was Bruce who pointed this out to me many years ago, and I haven't known anyone else who knows about it, because I don't know any road geeks. But this is useful knowledge. Why doesn't everyone know this? So maybe you'll love me for telling you about kerning, and maybe you'll hate me because it's annoying when it's done wrong, and it's done wrong a lot. Sometimes the space between two letters is just slightly off. That's bad kerning. There are a lot of ways that you can mess up the spacing, and they're not called kerning, but they're just as important. It could be a street sign that has too much space on the top, and the letters are too close to the bottom. And someone will say, "That guy only had one job to do," which means it was poor execution of text on billboards, road signs, business signs, and anything with lettering on it. Kerning is specific to the spacing between letters. And to demonstrate this on a podcast where I can't show you, let's consider three capital letters like T, A, B. So if you type it on your computer, capital T, capital A, capital B, you'll notice that the capital T is encroaching on the capital A. In other words, the top of the T extends over the foot of the A. If the right side of the T were to line up where the left foot of the A started, well, it would look wrong. It would be too much space. Making them closer or using negative kerning makes them look right. And some other examples of negative kerning are the spacing between letters like capital F and capital A, capital L and capital T, capital L and capital Y. All of these examples of negative kerning have been programmed into AI, into your computer. If they weren't closer together, your eyes would snag on them for just a nanosecond, but slowing down your reading. Now look at the capitals A and B. If you look closely, they have a little more personal space because there's no parts that overlap vertically. So that's regular kerning. And there's positive kerning, meaning adding space. Look at a lowercase f and a punctuation mark like a parentheses or a question mark. If they were treated like some other letters, they'd look too close. A little extra space or positive kerning makes reading them easier and smoother. So where is she going with this, you ask? Well, ultimately, the tasks of adjusting text, including kerning, has been programmed into artificial intelligence. your writing program on your computer has so many codes written in to correct the spacing. It's just another thing we take for granted. So I'm wondering, how long until music notation catches up? That's where I'm going. A few other things AI has taken care of. The consistency between a group of letters in a word is called tracking. Sometimes you have to close a gap or widen one to make the whole word look right. And your computer and all the fonts have this complexity programmed into it. Who knew? Here's two more. Line breaks and letting. Line breaks is deciding how many words should be on a line before moving to the next. In poetry, it's part of the writer's art. In signs, it's supposed to make the sign easier to read. And that's pretty important to road signs. Your brain is probably telling you it looks funny when the line breaks are awkward. I think it's a good idea to know why it's bugging you so you can just say, that doesn't look right. They should have made the words fit the sign better. And then move on. When you drive down the highway, or let's say you go to the airport, the signs should be well designed so that we don't have to think about them at all. And the last one, leading, like lead the metal. It comes from the lead that the typesetters use to make the spaces between the lines. And if that's not consistent, and sometimes it's not, it doesn't look right. And more importantly, it makes it harder to read quickly. Whether it's a road sign, or a business sign, or a billboard, you want the reader to be able to read it quickly without tripping over the kerning, or the tracking, or the leading. So as musicians, we can really appreciate this, because when we look at a piece of music, we don't want to be tripping over somebody's idiosyncrasies. Up until very recently, music was written out always by hand. Many musicians would become copywriters or copyists as a side hustle, and some of them, it was their main gig. They would slowly and painfully write out a score and its parts. And the spacing of notes was important. If done well, a whole note gets more space than a quarter note. The spacing between notes should be consistent with itself, but also the rhythm it was depicting. We've all played off good and bad parts. The ones that come from publishers like Schirmer, International, Durand et Fils, they're all right. But ballet parts in the 20th century were sometimes okay and sometimes pretty bad. And it would affect your playing too. Recently, we had some ballet parts that were recopied on a computer program like Sibelius or Finale by a cellist in the English National Ballet Philharmonic. His name was Lars Payne. And a lot of the phrases that were difficult to play because they were poor penmanship or copy were immediately easier because the computer program ensured consistency. I think as musicians, we have a keen eye for music that has good or bad copy because we think about it a lot. There's size and there's spacing and everything that makes it easier to read. Like the cello part to Mahler 5. It looks pretty good, but then there are a few lines where the copyist put one too many bars on a line. Like he started it and he had to fit too many 16th notes in, and well, it looks bad. And some pieces you just wish there was a little more space between the lines, and sometimes you wish that the page breaks made for easier page turns. Our music writing apps have really come a long way, and it makes it so much easier to read music. And someday, our music reading apps like Fourscore will learn to adjust the size the way our Kindle reader does, and that will make it great. But there are still a lot of complexities that the artificial intelligence needs to work out. Someday, the AI will figure out how to make a bar jump to the next line or the next page when you want to make the stabs and the notes a little bit bigger, like you do on your Kindle. And all the markings, like the ties and the bowings, the key changes, expression markings, everything that's attached to music has to be put into the program, and that's a lot for it to handle. But it will happen someday. And all the things that AI figured out about text, fonts, kerning, tracking, and leading will apply in many ways. Because music notation has a lot of the same needs. We also need to make it so that we can just fly through it without getting caught on a notation hiccup. Much the same way cars need to move through the airport without getting stuck on reading a sign. There was a time when music notation didn't include the rhythm. They were pretty good at finding a way to write down the pitches, but the rhythm, that took longer. And even before they learned to write the pitches, music was passed down just like storytellers told history over the ages. At one point, pitches were remembered on our hands, going around the palm in a spiral. The pitches each had a place, similar to the idea of a memory palace, like I talked about last week. So before literacy, there was oracity. Going back to written text, for a long time there was no spaces between the words. If you look at old Roman writings, you'll see little marks where the words are separated, or sometimes nothing at all. Then someone got the bright idea to put in spaces. It's so hard to believe that spaces had to be invented. Music and literature progressed along parallel lines, but music was much later. In the 9th century, it was a German music theorist called Franco of Cologne who proposed the notion that pitches could have their own length by making the notes have different shapes. Brilliant. Soon would come bar lines, standard staves, and clefs. It all had to evolve over centuries. Today, we can listen or play music that has been preserved by others for centuries. And it really wasn't that long ago, the 7th century, when the world believed music couldn't be preserved, that it disappeared after it was heard, and it could only exist in the memory of the listener. The famed scholar and music theorist Isidore of Seville wrote in the 7th century, "Unless sounds are held in the memory of man, they perish because they can't be written down." But his words were written down, and it would only be 200 years till music notation got the idea of rhythmic notation. So music was just a little behind in that regard, 200 years, give or take. I predict our iPad will be able to do with music scores what Kindle does with books in less than 5 years. Let's wait and see. Our world is changing faster than ever. So technology is great, and it makes our lives better. We can all agree to that. But don't let technology replace the best part of music, which is creating in front of a live, in-person audience. Thanks for supporting your local musicians. Thanks for listening to this podcast, and I'll see you next time.